Nearly 12 million people pass through America's jails each year, and it's believed that more than half suffer from some type of mental illness. The time between a detainee's release from jail and their court appearance is often when they're most vulnerable. Research suggests released persons are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than those in jail. An MSU clinical professor is leading a study aimed at stopping post-detention suicides. Dr. Jennifer Johnson joins us to talk about her research. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you so much.
What made you decide to do this in the first place?
Well, so my research has been a lot about finding better treatments for mental health and substance use problems for people involved in the justice system. And 2 years ago, the National Institute of Mental Health came to me and my other principal investigator, who's at Brown, and said, you know, we're trying to do population-level suicide prevention. About half of folks who commit suicide aren't in mental health treatment at the time they die. And we've looked at where they are, and it turns out one of the answers to that is they're in the justice system. What can you do for us for treatments for folks at risk for suicide in the justice system?
Why are released persons more likely to take their lives?
Jail, just to start with, collects folks at risk for a lot of things, including mental health and substance use problems. Usually when you're arrested, it's not the happiest moment in your life. Usually things are going wrong. In jail, you know, some people do commit suicide, but the jails watch them pretty closely. But once they're released into the community, there's nobody watching them. They may have access to guns, cars, pills, and, you know, they're just set loose with no supervision.
How did this study come together? Was this an interest you've always wanted to pursue?
You know, I have always been really interested in mental health and substance use care for vulnerable populations. You know, people living in poverty are more likely to have problems with mental health. Pregnant women have problems with mental health. I do treatment research for them. But I went into a women's prison 10 years ago, and I saw, you know, at the time I was 30-ish, and I saw rooms full of women in their 20s and 30s. You know, they looked a lot like me. A lot of them were moms. And I just thought, you know, for one twist of fate, this could be me or this could have been me. And they're, you know, so many of them are victims of physical and sexual violence, have mental health problems, addiction, and the current system does the best it can, but is limited in treatment resources. So, you know, that ended up being the focus of my research for the next 10 years is trying to figure out how to improve mental health care in particular for justice-involved folks.
Right now, what is the mental health status of the 12 million people who pass through the jail systems all over the country?
Well, like I said, you know, more than half have mental health problems. About 2/3 have addiction. And the jails have a really tough job. You know, when I just moved to Michigan, so I was friends with the head of the mental health services for the Department of Corrections in another state. And he explained, you know, we could get 300 admissions into the jail in a weekend. Jail and the police is who you call when you don't know what to do with someone when they're belligerent or high or psychotic or wandering the park at night not making sense. And so they end up, you know, like I said, getting 300 folks, all of whom, many of whom were often in crisis, and they may only have them a couple days before they're released. You know, most jails have maybe 1 or 2 full-time social workers, so they're working even to just assess everyone before they get in, much less provide any treatment or refer to services in the community. It's just very difficult. They just don't have the resources to do it.
Too short of a time and just not enough people.
Correct.
You're based in Flint, so you're working on a couple of groups in Genesee County, the Sheriff's Office and the Genesee Health System, the local community mental health treatment provider. Describe the parameters of your study and how will you work with those two groups?
Sure. So we have collaborators on the study, both from the Genesee County Sheriff's Office and from Genesee Health System, who is our community mental health center here. There's 2 different ways. So the first is that we want to make this treatment work in the real world. We want to make the study as informative to real world practice as we possibly can. So you know, the sheriff's office and the community mental health system are our reality checks, so to speak. You know, they'll advise us and gives us tips on, you know, this would absolutely work in the real world, this would absolutely not work in the real world. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, we'll be recruiting people from the jail. We'll be in and out of the jail, you know, almost every day. And community mental health is a system that, you know, if folks get connected to treatment, that's often where they go. And so we'll use Genesee health system providers to moonlight for our study, the clinicians, to go into the jail and then follow up with folks after release. And, you know, that's the partnership that a lot of municipalities are trying to put together between community mental health and the jail, because everybody realizes this is a problem. They realize they need better connection to treatment, but it's just logistically sometimes challenging to make those jail community mental health partnerships smooth.
We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Johnson. She's a C.S. Mott Endowed Professor of Public Health with the Michigan State University College of Human Medicine in Flint. She's leading a study aimed at preventing suicides among recently released jail detainees. How will you track behavior once a person is released from jail during your study?
Sure. So our study, my research assistants will be calling participants and following them up to a year after release. At 1 month, 4 months, 8 months, and 12 months after release, we'll ask about suicidal thoughts, suicidal plans, any suicide attempts, hospitalizations. We're also tracking both the cost of the intervention and cost savings to the overall health system because, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, cost and cost effectiveness drives a lot of decisions about health care and the justice system. And, you know, if anyone at any of those times is considered really to be an emergency situation, to be an imminent risk, we'll refer them for emergency care.
How often do people tell the truth in something like this?
You know, so in the community, often. You know, you'd be surprised. In some of my studies, we ask people about drugs, we ask them about suicide, we ask them about mental health, we ask them about risky sexual behavior. And for the most part, when you emphasize that what they're telling you is completely confidential and that you have no judgment about any of it, you're just trying to understand, people will, by and large, tell you the truth. In the jail, it's more complicated because in prisons and jails, they can get put on suicide watch, and folks who are savvy to the system sometimes will deny suicidal thoughts because I don't want to be on suicide watch. But out in the community, by and large, folks are straightforward.
It feels to me like this stigma surrounding mental health is lightening up a little bit. Is that your assessment?
I think it is. You know, I think as a psychologist, I get caught off guard because to me, it's not stigmatizing at all. You know, I'm just so past that. So in a way, I think it's hard for me to judge that because sometimes I still get caught off guard by stigma because I don't think that way.
We're too close to it, right?
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. too close. I just don't. It's like a doctor judging someone for having diabetes. I just don't even think of it. But I think that, you know, in some communities it is more than others, and particularly in minority communities, I think there is still some stigma, which is unfortunate because sometimes it keeps folks from getting help.
Well, clinical depression is in our family's gene pool, and I remember 20 years ago, that was just something you didn't talk about at all. If you did, it was in a quiet room with your psychologist. But nowadays, and maybe it's just because I live and work on a campus, it seems like so many more people are talking about it and getting help.
I think that's true. Actually, when you said that, I had a flashback to childhood of someone in the family that had a mental health problem and how hush-hush it was, and our parents didn't want us to tell anyone. And nowadays, yeah, it doesn't seem to be quite so much like that.
Dr. Jennifer Johnson is our guest. She is a C.S. Mott Endowed Professor of Public Health with the Michigan State University College of Human Medicine in Flint. And she's leading a study aimed at preventing suicides among recently released jail detainees. A key part of your research involves use of what's loosely called a safety plan. What is that and how does it work?
Sure. So, you know, interesting things happen to people's thinking when they become suicidal. One of the things that often happens is when people are very depressed or very, very suicidal in crises, they stop being able to see other options, and almost all they can see or the only option they can see is to die. So what the safety plan does, it's kind of common sense, but it's not common sense when you're in that place. The counselor will come in, talk with the person, find out, you know, what got them to the place that they are right now, what are their triggers for feeling especially suicidal, and then make a written plan for what can you do when you feel this way. And it could be things like call somebody. Okay, who could you call? You know, who are your friends who are positive, suicide hotline. Also, if somebody has made plans for suicide, they can do things to make those plans more difficult to carry out. If you have a gun in your house, you can give it to a friend for a few months. If your plan was involved a vehicle, you can, you know, late at night, you can avoid driving late at night or have somebody come with you. If there's a particular time of day or something that's troubling, you can have someone sit with you. The safety plan also goes over, you know, okay, do you need treatment? In general, the answer is yes. How can we help connect you to services? Are there calming techniques you can use on your own, like going for a walk or doing something you enjoy? And it's a pretty simple, common sense sort of approach to just keep the person alive through those difficult times, and in the meantime, try to get them hooked in with the other services that they need.
Great advice for all of us. Dr. Jennifer Johnson is a clinical psychologist at C.S. Mott, endowed professor of public health with Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine in Flint. Dr. Johnson, thanks so much for talking with us, and best of luck with your research.
All right, thank you so much for having me on the show.